Wanted to again thank the Synans for hosting a wonderful night to be last night at the Yacht Club. It was absolutely gorgeous. We always appreciate the hard work that people put into it. You sometimes don't know what goes on behind the scenes. It's kind of like the duck sitting on the water that looks very calm, but underneath he's paddling ferociously. A lot of work to be done, so we very much appreciate that. Well, brethren, if you like titles for sermons, again, this one's going to be just a relatively basic one, but I thought it would be good. I'd like to ask the question, what is leaven, and why did God choose this symbol? You know, for those who have been keeping the Feast of Unleavened Bread for a long, long time, I think it's good every once in a while to review some of the basics. The last time I did this in a sermon here was 3 years ago. There are several people attending now that weren't there then, so I thought it would be a good idea to go through some of this information again. So we know in the church that we need to put leaven out of our homes. We know that it symbolizes sin and so many things. We've been in the church for a long time. But if others ask us of why we do this, how good are we at being able to explain what leaven is and why we put it out? Now, certain things stick in your mind that you hear as a kid, right? Somebody says something, you think, oh, that's really cute. I'm going to remember that. I remember, you know, celebrating the days of unleavened bread since I was a little kid, and it just didn't dawn on me that this was something unusual. But the minister that I had growing up said, to the rest of the world, this is a real oddity. It would be as if someone would come up to you and say, well, I'm in a special holy week, and during this week, we are only allowed to eat unsweetened pickles. And how bizarre that would sound to me. To tell someone that for 7 days we can't have leavening in our bread is bizarre. Why do we do that? What's the reason behind it? Can we explain to others why we put leaven out of our houses for 7 days? If you're new to keeping unleavened bread, and I don't know that we've got many that are new, an explanation of what constitutes leaven might be helpful. Even every year, as we're going through things, you know, we always ask, well, is this on the list or is that on the list? This year was barley malt. Is that on the list? I don't remember. Let me check. And so maybe it's a good idea to review what is and what isn't leavening. Then I want to show you how leaven was used in ancient Israel, because that is very key to why God chose that as a symbol for the days of unleavened bread. And then we'll discuss why God chose and to designate an entire week of holy celebration surrounding the disuse of a certain food product. Sounds bizarre, doesn't it? An entire week. Nothing else in God's plan is like this. He's given us an entire week where we have to take a certain food product and put it out of our house. Give you an assignment during this week. Go to Life, Hope, and Truth, and in the search window, type the word leaven. There's some really, really good articles. You're going to see a really good sermon next Sabbath from Mr. Hanisco on the unleavened bread of sincerity. Very good information that's out there. But let's start with the very simple, and let's talk about what is leaven. What is leaven? Leaven can be used as a noun or as a verb. I'll give you definitions of both. Used as a noun, it is an agent such as yeast that can cause batter or dough to rise, especially by fermentation. We'll talk about fermentation today. But it also has a second meaning. And those of you with ears to hear, you can catch the spiritual significance behind this, even though it was intended as a physical aspect. Leaven is an element or an influence or an agent that works subtly to lighten, enliven, or modify something else. Now, again, that's intended to talk about putting yeast in bread, and it livens it, and it, you know, et cetera. It also can be used as a verb, to leaven something, which means to add some rising agent to, or to cause it to rise by fermentation. But then again, point three, looking it up in dictionary.com, to pervade with a lightening, enlivening, or a modifying influence. I want to read from Wikipedia what it talks about what a leavening agent is. There's going to be some points in here that I want you to think about, and then we'll analyze these as we go. A leavening agent is any one of a number of substances used in doughs or batters that cause a foaming action which lightens and softens the finished product. Leavening agents add gas bubbles, usually carbon dioxide, into the dough, and they produce produced either by biological agents or chemical agents that react with moisture, heat, acidity, or other triggers. Now, we're going to analyze that today as we go through this. I want you to note that leaven by itself can't do anything. Any of you ever have a packet of yeast sitting in your pantry or whatever? What happens to that packet of yeast sitting in the pantry? Nothing. If you didn't throw it out every year because of the days of unleavened bread, I would imagine that packet of yeast could sit there for decades. I don't know if it would ever go bad. It just put it in there and just sit it in there, and there you go. But if you take it out and you add water and you add heat and other things, now it starts to react. Think about that when you think about sin. Sin oven by itself can't corrupt you unless you let it, unless you let it in there, unless you let it start to ferment. If sin is somewhere else and it's not actively in your life, if it's on a shelf somewhere, it's not affecting you. Think about those as we will be talking about that. Note also that the action starts small and spreads throughout the entire product. And one source that I read, I thought this was interesting. It says that it changes the first product into an entirely different product. It starts out as a lump of dough, and by the time it's done rising, it is a completely different product. There's nothing similar to unleavened. If you were to take a lump of unleavened bread and just put it in the oven and bake, it would come out almost like a rock. It's not going to be light. It's not going to be fluffy. It's not going to have that wonderful smell. It is a completely different product. A lot of lessons there. Also, another website that I read, which I thought was interesting because I'm always looking for spiritual elements, this other one said that leaven leaves a permanent scar on the finished product, meaning it can never go back to what it was prior to that leaven influencing it. Once that leaven has permeated the lump, you can reach a point of no return where there's nothing you can do. It is now going to be permanently scarred by the leaven. So many lessons there. This swelling and by fermentation can happen in one of two ways, as Wikipedia explained it. It can be biological and it can be chemical. So let's talk about both of those just for a moment. Biological leaven are things like funguses, fungi, if you want to be correct, or microorganisms that release CO2 as a part of their life cycle. They often leave behind a waste product that is ethanol, and that also flavors the product. If you've ever had an unleavened product and a leavened product, there is a taste to leavened bread that is caused by ethanol. And that ethanol leaves almost a sour taste to it. But that sour taste, as long as you've got salt in it, sour and salt together is an amazing flavor and an amazing aroma. There used to be a Mrs. Baird's Bakery in downtown Dallas, and people would drive to work. And to a person, when they would go past the bakery, they would always roll their windows down. Because every morning, they had this wonderful smell of fresh baked bread that they could waft into the car for just a few minutes. And there's something about that that just makes you happy. Smelling fresh baked bread is an amazing thing. So they leave behind a waste byproduct called ethanol that flavors it. Yeast leavening requires time to ferment or proof. So you take, if you've ever done this with yeast, you take it, you put it in some warm water, and it starts to do bubble and do all the stuff, and then you put it in the loaf, and you mix it all in, and you set it there with a towel over it, and all of a sudden, it doubles in size. And then you pound it back down again. And I remember the very first time I saw this, I thought, you're ruining the bread. But guess what? It rises back again. It doesn't matter how much you pound it, it's just going to keep coming back. And then you bake it, and it is amazing. That swelling happens over time. It isn't something that happens immediately. It takes time to ferment or to proof. Examples of this type of biological leavening are yeast and sourdough starter. Have any of you ever done friendship bread? You know what I mean by friendship bread? We're going to talk about that in just a moment. Second type of yeast product is a chemical yeast. Chemical compounds can also release CO2 when they react with moisture and heat. Examples of this would be baking soda, baking powder, aluminum carbonate, baker's ammonia, potash, things like that. Now, baking soda would not have been known to the ancient Israelites. So some people, because of that, and I've heard people say this over the years in the church, that wasn't what God referred to. The only thing they had was starter yeast. It was just yeast, so that's it. The reason why the church has said over the years that we would also include chemical agents is because of what they do. They do the same thing that yeast does. They introduce CO2. They introduce gas bubbles. It happens the same way that yeast does. So the church places chemical leaven as products that we also should avoid. So, again, baking soda wouldn't have been known, but because of the fact that it swells by fermentation, the church has placed it in the category of things we should avoid. Now, without going into any more detail, I handed something like this out 3 years ago, but I've got copies of it again. This is something that the church puts out on what is and what isn't leaven. And it's interesting to go through as you look at this, because sometimes you don't know. Here are things that we would say are leaven. Yeast, sourdough, starter, baking soda, sodium bicarbonate, et cetera, all types of baking powders. But then things that aren't leavening. You ever looked at your ingredients and wondered about it? Yeast extract. Okay, it's got the word yeast in it, so maybe that's leaven too. Well, no, yeast extract is used, it is sterile leaven. It's simply used to flavor the food. It has no rising agent. If you put yeast extract in something, it's not going to rise. It's not going to become leavened. Autolyzed yeast, brewer's yeast, all these things are not considered leavening. Tarula yeast, egg white, some people will question that. If I take egg whites and I whip them up and I put them in a pound cake or whatever, does that constitute leavening? No, it doesn't. Steam or air, as in popovers. Doesn't it constitute leavening? And then it gives samples of the sources on here. So if you want a copy of this, I've got 20, 21 some odd copies up here. Come up afterwards. You're welcome to take one home. If you've never seen this, it can be very interesting to have and also helpful next year when it's time to clean the house again to look at, because it's you don't always remember. Sometimes it's good to look. I did something interesting. This was just for my own benefit. I went out to a Jewish website, to an Hasidic Jewish website. They are the ultra strict, to see what they would consider leaven. And boy, their list is a whole lot longer than our list. They would, anything, basically anything on the planet is considered leaven, and you can't have anything. I mean, we'll describe that more when we get into it. But this is, again, the church is teaching. Now, if you look through here and say, no, I don't think we should use egg whites, then you go by what your conscience says. But I'm just telling you what the church puts out. So if you're interested in that, we have a printout for you. Now, as a way of getting into the topic today, what I wanted to do is read something. This is from an article on ancient Israelite cuisine, and it talks about the bread that ancient Israelites had. I want to just read this, and then I'll make comments along the way, because it's very important to why God chose this as a symbol. Grain products comprised the majority of the food consumed by ancient Israel. The staple food was bread, and it was such a vital part of every meal that the Hebrew word for bread, and if you kind of spell it in English, would be L-E-H-E-M, lechem, not lechaim, that's a different word, lechem means bread, that bread also tended to refer to the whole meal or food in general. So we might say that today, let's get together and break bread, meaning let's have a meal. That would include meat and potatoes and vegetables and all that. But because it was such a big part of the Israelite diet, the word bread actually became the word for a meal. Let's have supper. They would say, let's have bread. The supreme importance of bread to ancient Israelites was also demonstrated by the fact that biblical Hebrew has over a dozen words for bread. All kinds of words for bread in there. We're going to talk about a couple of them today. Bread was eaten at every meal and is estimated to have provided 50 to 70% of an ordinary person's daily calories. That's a significant amount of bread. If you would consider, a lot of meals were nothing more than bread and then some type of sauce or whatever that they would break the bread and dip it in the sauce. So you might think today that might be something like we would do with chips and hot sauce. That was a very typical meal for ancient Israel, was to have some type of, maybe they would take vegetables and puree them or something and dip the bread in this puree. And that was their entire meal. Often they didn't have meat. Often they didn't have vegetables or whatever. Often it was simply bread. Now, this is important. I want you to listen to this. I thought this was very interesting. The Israelites cultivated both barley and wheat. Now, you remember I talked about that. Barley was during the days of unleavened bread, and then wheat started on Pentecost. These two grains are mentioned first in the biblical list of the seven species of the land of Israel, and their importance as food is also seen in the celebration of the barley harvest, that's unleavened bread, although they don't specify it, and also at the Feast of Passover and Pentecost. Bread making began with the milling of the grain. I want you to think about this. When you want to make bread, what do? You go to the store and you buy flour. The ancient Israelites didn't have a store to go buy flour. They had grain in the field. So the Israelites would take the grain and they would start with the milling of the grain. This was a very difficult, time-consuming task performed only by the women. The men had their jobs to do. They had the cattle to take care of. They had the trading to do and all of that. But the women's responsibility every morning when they got up was to take whole grain and start to mill, start the process of getting it ready to make bread. Each household stored its own grain, and it is estimated that it required at least 3 hours every day to produce just enough flour to make bread for one family for one day. So imagine, ladies, every day you had to spend 3 hours of your day just milling grain to make flour. And that's just to get the flour. We're not talking about, we haven't started baking yet. This is just to make flour. Every day you would have to do this. At least 3 hours of daily effort to produce enough flour to make enough bread for a family of five. After the grain was milled into flour, it was mixed with water and kneaded in a large trough. So you've got this big bowl, you put the flour, you put water, oils or whatever else you're going to put in, and then you got to start working it. And that's not an easy task in itself. That maybe is another hour or so. And then you let it sit and rest. At some point in time during the day, a starter called a seer was added as the very last step. The starter was prepared by reserving a small portion of dough from yesterday's batch to absorb the yeast in the air and thus help leaven the new dough. So they would take the milled flour, they would put water and stuff in it, and they would knead it into a lump, and then they would set it aside, and then at the end of the day, and that's important, they would take a bit from yesterday's that has yeast stuff in it, put it in just a little bit, and then mix it into that dough, put some type of a cloth over it, and then let it sit. And overnight, that would start to spread through that entire lump and ferment. And by the morning, it was raised, and then it would be ready to bake. So a seer, that's very similar to friendship bread. Every day when you make bread, before you bake the bread, you take a little bit of it, put it in a baggie or whatever they used. I don't think they had baggies back then, but you know what I'm talking about. And set it aside so that next day, when you went through this process of 3 hours of grinding grain and kneading, then you would put that in there and let it ferment. And then the next morning, before you baked it, you'd take a little piece out and save it aside. That's called a starter. And in Hebrew, that was the seer. So with that in mind, I'd like to go back to Exodus chapter 12, and I'd like to read through this process of this very special Days of Unleavened Bread that the Israelites are going to encounter. So you remember what it is that they were doing. They would have to prepare this bread. By the evening, it was in a trough sitting. They would wait before they went to bed. Sometime late in the evening, they would add the yeast so that it could rise overnight to be baked the next day. Exodus chapter 12, let's start in verse 1. Now the Eternal spoke to Moses and Aaron in the land of Egypt, saying, "This month will be a beginning of months. It will be the first month of the year to you. speak to all the congregation of Israel, saying, on the 10th day of this month, every man will take a lamb for himself, according to the household of his father, a lamb for a household. You remember I said not every meal had meat in it, so this was kind of special. The Israelites were supposed to take a lamb on the 10th day of the month and set it aside. Verse 6. Now you will keep it, this lamb, until the 14th day of the same month. Then the whole assembly of the congregation of Israel will kill their lambs at twilight. So this is in the evening as the sun is setting and the day of the 14th is starting. And they will take some of the blood and they will put it on the doorpost and on the lintel of the house where they eat. And they will eat the flesh on that night, roasted in fire with unleavened bread and bitter herbs. Now, I'm going to ask and not answer a question on purpose. I'd like for you maybe to go by and think, instead of me just telling you everything, let you go off and think about this yourself. Why did God have the Israelites eat unleavened bread on the Passover? The event that causes God to want them to celebrate unleavened bread every year doesn't happen until the next night when they have to leave Israel with why did God have them do unleavened bread before the events of unleavened bread occurred? That's for you to think about. See what you can come up with. Why did God use unleavened bread? But he did. So on the Passover, we had unleavened bread. Theoretically, and some of you may have done this as well, Passover was Sunday night. By Monday night, it's got to be all out. So in theory, you could have done some de-leavening on Monday, right? You don't have to have leaven out of your house until the start of unleavened bread, which would have been Monday night. But Passover was Sunday night. Why did God choose to have unleavened bread during Passover? I'll leave that with you. Verse 31. And he called for Moses and Aaron by night and said, rise. I always find humor in the Bible. We're going to talk about unleavened bread and God's telling them to rise. By the way, when we do songs on unleavened bread, when I used to do songs, I would always say, would you please stand up instead of would you please rise, because we don't rise during the days of unleavened bread. Then he called for Moses and Aaron by night and said, rise, go out from among my people, both you and the children of Israel, and go serve the Lord as you've said. Take of your flocks and your herds as you have said, and be gone. And bless me also. I can still hear Yul Brynner say this. Verse 33, and the Egyptians urged the people that they might send them out of the land in haste, for they said, lest we all be dead. So the people took their dough before it was leavened, having their kneading bowls bound up in their cloths on their shoulders. And they did according to the word of the Lord, and they left. How is it that every household in Israel had bread with no leaven? You ever ask that question? I always find it interesting that every household had bread, but the leaven hadn't been put in it yet. Well, if you think back to this process, this is a long process to make bread. It takes hours just to get the flour. And then after you've got the flour, then you put it in water, and then you set it aside and let it sit there for a while. And then at the last thing of the day, then you put the leaven in to wait overnight. The process of adding leaven was the last step, and it was done late in the evening. And all of Israel did it the same way every time. It was the tradition. You can hear Topol singing, tradition. You know, that's the way it was done. If you were a woman in Israel, this is how you made bread. You got up in the morning, and you baked what you had prepared from the night before, and then while that was baking, or just after, you went out, got more grain, and you started this process, and that was a daily routine. So when they went out in the evening portion of that first day of unleavened bread, the women had not, by tradition, put leaven in their lumps yet. So they went out with the kneading bowl, with the bread in it without the leaven. They had the cover over it. If you've ever done that, you know what that's like. You're ready for it. You're ready to put the leaven in, but they hadn't done it yet. Verse 37. Then the children of Israel journeyed from Ramesses to Sukkoth, about 600,000 men, besides women and children, an estimated over a million, million and a half people, possibly even 2 million people made this journey. Verse 38, a mixed multitude went up with them also, and flocks and herds and a great deal of livestock, and they baked unleavened cakes of the dough which they had brought out of Egypt, for it was not leavened because they were driven out of Egypt and couldn't wait, nor had they prepared provisions for themselves. So we know that this evening, the following morning when they got up, they would have had a lump of bread without leaven in it. And so maybe for the first time in most of these women's lives, they prepared bread that didn't have leaven in it. You can imagine when you do, have you ever made a mistake and not put an ingredient in and baked it and it came out and thought, oh boy, this just tastes awful. I'm sure when it came out, it probably was, as the scripture says, the bread of affliction. It probably did not taste good. Didn't smell good as it was baking, and it didn't taste good, and it was hard, and it was lumpy, and ugh. But that's it. It's all we got, because we didn't have the time to go through this regular thing. Isn't that interesting? Go to chapter 13. Chapter 13. Verse 1, then the Eternal spoke to Moses, saying, consecrate to me all the firstborn that opened the womb from among the children of Israel, both man and beast, for it is mine. Verse 3, and Moses said to the people, remember this day in which you went out of Egypt, out of the house of bondage, for by strength the hand of the Eternal brought you out of this place. No leavened bread shall be eaten. Isn't that interesting? So there were a lot of other things that happened that night. They also robbed the Egyptians, if you want to call it that. Why isn't that a part? Why don't we go to our neighbors, knock on doors and say, give me your jewelry? That's not a part of it. This is the symbol, out of all the things that happened that night, that God said, for 7 days, you're going to eat unleavened bread. No leavened bread shall be eaten. Now, again, I know I do this a lot, but sometimes you've got to understand what's being said in Hebrew for it to make sense. Remember I said earlier that the word for bread was lehem, L-E-H-E-M. That is not the word that is used here when it says, no leavened bread shall be eaten. It's a different Hebrew word. Remember, I said there were over a dozen words for bread in Hebrew. You need to understand what leavening is and what leavening is not, and it is easier if you understand it from Hebrew, from the words that were used in Hebrew. So your Bible says something like, no leavened bread shall be eaten, but Hebrew doesn't actually say that. There actually is only one word where you have the words unleavened and bread. That is only one word in Hebrew. In my Bible, unleavened is in italics, meaning it's that word's not there. It's an assumed word, and it's just the word bread. The word for bread used here is chametz, H-A-M-E-T-S, chametz. And that word chametz has a very different meaning. The Hebrew root word for chametz means something that is fermented. It could include beer, it could include wine, it could include a lot of things. Now, there's always been the discussion of whether we should not have beer because it has yeast in it. It's not the days of leavened beer, it's the unleavened bread. This is a product we eat. But chametz means something that was fermented. So, in essence, what he's saying here is, and I'll reread this, the Lord brought you out of this place. No chametz shall be eaten. Nothing that has been fermented shall be eaten. That would have made sense to the Israelites because they brought their dough out without leavening added to it. And so they recognized, what God's talking about is he wants us to do what happened on this night. He wants us to have a product that has not been fermented. And on a physical level, that's the key, fermentation. Let's go down to verse 4. On this day you are going out in the month of Abib, and it will be when the Eternal brings you into the land of the Canaanites and the Hittites and the Amorites and the Hivites and the Jebusites, which he swore to your fathers, to give you a land flowing with milk and honey. You will keep this service in this month. What service is he talking about? Verse 6. 7 days you will, there's three things here, eat unleavened bread. That's in verse 7. Let me go on. 7 days you will eat unleavened bread, and on the seventh day there will be a feast to the Lord. So now let's look at verse 6. Now you have a different term. 7 days you will eat, notice what it says, unleavened bread. Earlier on it said you will have no leavened bread. That's chametz. This is a different word. When it says you 7 days you will eat unleavened bread, guess what that word is? Matzah. Ever heard of matzah? Put an O on it, matzo. Is that cardboardy thing that, of course, now they have the egg and onion variety, which is a little better. Some of that bark, what do you call that? That thing you made? Matzo bark that we have some back there, which is actually pretty good. It just has a kind of a regular matzo base to it. But that's what the word is. So what it's saying in verse 6 is, 7 days you shall eat matzah. What does matzah mean? It means, and again, the origin can be a little unclear, but the basic gist of the word is something that has not been soured or made bitter with yeast. In other words, it's almost the opposite of chametz. Chametz is fermented. This is something that has not gone through that process of fermentation. So again, the word bread is nowhere used in this entire chapter. The word bread, lechem, is not there. You have chametz, which means fermented, and you have matzah, which means before that process of fermentation takes place. So in essence, it's saying what you shall eat when you eat. Doesn't say you have to eat it every day. Still, I think it's a good idea too, but it doesn't say that. It just says that when you eat, you make sure that it has been before the process of fermentation. All right, now let's go to verse 7, because I think this is key. There's actually three different terms or words mentioned here. Unleavened bread shall be eaten for 7 days. No leavened bread shall be seen among you, nor shall leaven be seen among you in all your quarters. Those are three different words. Unleavened bread is matzah. So, let's go on. And then it says leavened bread, that's chametz. But then there's a third term in here where it says no leaven shall be seen. That word, again, is the Hebrew word seer, which is this starter lump. You might call it a barm. I don't know if you've ever heard that term before. People that bake may have heard that, or the starter lump. So in essence, what God was saying was, when you eat, it has to be matzah. It has to be before the process of fermentation. When you eat, you can't even have chametz in your house. It means you have to remove bread that has already been fermented. And it says you have to get rid of the leaven, the seer. You have to even get rid of that starter loaf. You can't, like, take the starter loaf and say, okay, well, for this week, I'll just keep it in a baggie in somewhere, and then when it comes time to make it again, I'll pull the starter loaf out and start over. You even have to get rid of the starter loaf. Now, this would have been a big deal for the Israelite women. Making yeast from scratch is not an easy process. And every year, you think about what they had to go through. All you have to do is empty out your vacuum cleaner bag. They had to not only throw out all of the leavened products, they had to throw out the starter yeast so that the day after the day of unleavened bread, they had to make yeast again. They already have a full day of just milling grain and all of that. So to get rid of that would have been a big deal. I'll give you a quick story. I actually looked it up to make sure that this wasn't no fake news. We have that going on. Because I had heard someone say this once, and I looked it up, and it's really true. There are many Jewish people today. I'm not trying to blame Jews for being silly. I mean, we all can do silly things. But instead of getting, they strictly translate this to mean you can't own any leaven. No leaven, you can't own any leaven that's in your house. So what they do is they go to their Gentile neighbor, and they sell them their leaven for a dollar. They don't remove it from the house. Now, often they'll take it and they'll put it in a cabinet, and then they'll even tape the cabinet door closed. And then at the end of the days of unleavened bread, they'll go back to their neighbor and they will buy their leaven back for a dollar. It's not theirs. It's still in their home, but we don't own it. And the article that I read even went on to say, imagine what this would have been like if you owned a deli where you had to make, this is your livelihood. And you're selling it to someone for 7 days, you'd sell your business. And there are people that do that to this day. They will sell their business so that they don't have to clean the leaven out because they make bread for a living. And then hope and pray that that Gentile will sell them their business back because they literally have to sell the entire business for the days of unleavened bread. The ways that some people will go to get out of cleaning their homes. I like our process better. Verse 8, the Eternal shall tell your, and you will tell your son in that day, saying, this is done because of what the Eternal did for me when I came out of Egypt. It will be as a sign to you on your hand and as a memorial between your eyes, that the Eternal's law may be in your mouth. For with a strong hand the Eternal made you go out of Egypt. You will therefore keep this ordinance in its season from year to year." So again, you think about all the things that happened during that period of time. Again, we don't go from door to door and get jewelry from our neighbors. We don't take blood and sprinkle it on our doorposts, on the lintel on the doorpost anymore. In fact, after that first Passover, it doesn't really say that sprinkling of the blood ever happened again. That was for a specific purpose because the death angel was going to pass over Israel that night. When they went into the wilderness, they didn't have doors and lintels. They had tents. I don't think they sprinkled the blood on their tents every year. I just don't think it happened. But the one thing that God took over, held over to be used year after year after year, was get rid of chametz. When you eat matzah, and take that seer and throw it away so that you have to start over every year again and again and again. You will keep this ordinance in its season from year to year. And that's what we do. Now, let's move on to the next part of this. Why did God choose leaven as his symbol for this festival? Why leaven? Why not the blood on the post? Why not? Why don't we kill a lamb every year? In essence, if you think about it, we actually do. When we break the unleavened bread, that's the body of Christ, and the blood of Christ is the wine. So we still have that ceremony, but we don't actually do a lamb anymore. But why do we still do unleavened bread? We just read it in Exodus 13, but I would just reiterate here. To the ancient Israelites, unleavened bread pictures God delivering them from Egypt. That's all they would have known about this ceremony. They wouldn't have got the intention of the Messiah coming and Jesus Christ dying for their sins. That just never would have entered their minds. To them, the whole idea of having matzah for 7 days was to remind them what God did for them. The use of unleavened bread became the symbol to ancient Israel because on that night they hadn't put their usual leaven in the loaves. And there's nothing else in the Old Testament that describes the use of unleavened bread for anything other than that. But in the New Testament, we're given a lot more information about what unleavened bread pictures. Now, I want to review several facts here, and I want you to be thinking ahead because we're going to come back to this at the end. As I go through this list, I would like for you to think about the dual meaning of yeast or leavening used in baking. It causes the dough to puff up. It works subtly, slowly, and steadily. We'll come back and talk about all of these at the end. It starts small, but if unchecked, spreads to the entire loaf. You put a little bit of yeast in and you mix it up and you let it sit, it will travel through the entire loaf. There's nothing you can do. It cannot be stopped once the process is started. It permanently changes its environment into an entirely new product. It can't act alone. It has to have a trigger. You can already see all these spiritual analogies, why this is such a perfect analogy that God would have us go through. It can be transferred from one to another. Can sin be transferred from one to another? Can your bad attitude affect somebody else? You better believe it. Just like that starter can go into an unleavened lump, you put a little bit of somebody else's bad attitude, and it can spread and consume your life. Bread is a staple food source for ancient Israel. It took a long time to produce, and it was very meaningful for their culture. Is this culture very meaningful in today's society? You know, when we come out of things, it's almost, if you're not thinking about it from the perspective of what God intends for us to do, coming out of this world can seem painful. You mean I can't play basketball on Saturday? I can't go to the bar on Friday night? I can't, go out and smoke with my buddies? This society is important to this society. But God wants us to change how we act in this society. What does leaven symbolize for us today in the church? I have a couple of scriptures that I want to turn to, and then we'll use these as we go through. Matthew chapter 16. Matthew chapter 16. And let's start in verse 5. One of the things that Jesus Christ tells us that leaven symbolizes is hypocrisy. I want you to notice this in two different sections in Matthew. Matthew 16, verse 5, we'll start here. When the disciples had come to the other side, they forgot to take bread. This would have been lechem, or this would have been chametz, because this would have been bread that was leavened. When Jesus came to them, said, take heed and beware of the leaven, the seer of the Pharisees. Now, think about this from the perspective of what Christ is saying. When you're around the Pharisees, be careful. They can be a starter loaf or a starter lump. You let that get in you, it's going to change you. You know, you didn't bring bread. I'm telling you, beware. There's types of bread out there that can be very dangerous, can be very damaging. Take heed and beware of the leaven of the Pharisees. And they reasoned among themselves, saying, did he say this because we don't have any bread? They didn't catch what he was saying. But Jesus, being aware of it, said, oh, you have little faith. Why do you reason among yourselves because you brought no bread? Do you not yet understand or remember the five loaves and the 5,000 and how many baskets were taken up? Or the seven loaves or the 4,000 and how many large baskets were taken up? How is it that you don't understand that I didn't speak to you concerning bread, but beware of the leaven of the Pharisees and the Sadducees? Now let's turn over to Matthew 23, because Jesus Christ even gets more specific. Matthew 23, let's just read verses 27 and 28. He says this a lot of times in here. Verse 27 says, woe unto you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites. You know, the leaven can represent hypocrisy. Hypocrites often are people that are really puffed up. They really believe in themselves. For you are like whitewashed tombs, which appear beautiful outward, but inside are full of dead men's bones and uncleanness. We need to be putting that stuff out. Verse 28, even so, you also outwardly appear righteous, but inside you are full of hypocrisy and lawlessness. So leaven is akin to hypocrisy. Let's go to Galatians 5 and verse 7, and let's read something else that it says about leaven. Galatians 5 and verse 7. Galatians 5 verse 7. Says, who hindered you from obeying the truth? Verse 8, this persuasion does not come from him who called you. A little leaven leavens the whole lump. But I have confidence in you, in the Lord, that you will have no other mind, but he who troubles you shall bear his judgment, whoever he is. So we look at what God is saying here, in that the disobedience, you look at again at verse 7, who hindered you from being obedient? Who hindered you from obeying the truth? If you do that, if you let a little bit of unbelief or a little bit of disobeying my truth, then it can spread and start to take over your entire life. So we know that leaven not only symbolizes hypocrisy, but it also symbolizes disobedience. Now we tend to kind of lump that together and say leaven is a type of or a manifestation of sin. And that's very true. But I also think it's important to be able to understand even two parts of it, both hypocrisy and disobedience. What does unleavened bread symbolize? Remember, they're two different things. Chametz is a leavened product. That's hypocrisy, etc. But is unleavened bread, does that just mean the absence of hypocrisy? No, it actually is a little more subtle to that, and we're going to go into that in just a moment. More than just getting rid of a leavened product, if you remember what it said back in Exodus 12 and 13, you get rid of chametz, but you eat matzah. There's two separate things there. You not only have to get rid of sin. You know, it would just be like you think about the time when Christ said that the lady that was freed of a demon spirit, and the mind was swept clean, but she didn't do anything to protect it, and the demon came back in later on. You not only have to get rid of the leaven, but you have to eat unleavened bread. There's a second symbol here. Mr. Simon went through this. I want to go through this in even more detail. Let's go to 1 Corinthians 5. It's always interesting when two guys that are putting their thoughts together come up with some of the same things. I really appreciated his comments. They fit hand in hand with what I want to talk about today. So let's spend some time and let's go through the first eight verses of 1 Corinthians chapters 1 and 2. 1 Corinthians 5, verse 1. Mr. Simon read this. Let's go back and review this again. It is actually reported that there is sexual immorality among you, and such immorality as has not even been named among the Gentiles, that a man has his father's wife. When you look at this, I think it's interesting that Paul is saying, not only do you have this sin, but you've got a sin that even the Gentiles don't do. And you're supposed to be converted Israelites. How dare you do this? Something had happened in Corinth that was allowing hypocrisy and disobedience to enter into their lives. And Paul is about to explain to them what it is that has happened in their lives. Notice verse 2. You are puffed up and have not rather mourned that he who has done this deed might be taken away from among you. There's a lot there. If you think about what we were talking about, not only do you have to have unleavened bread, but you have to put out the chametz, and you have to put out what? The starter loaf, the seer. Why? Read this again. This should make sense. You are puffed up. You have not rather mourned that he who did this deed might be taken away from among you. Why? Because he was like a starter loaf. If you don't take him out, he's going to end up infecting the whole bread. You've got to get rid of him. You've got to put him out until that is taken away. They should have reacted to this leavening agent by taking it away or removing it from the body. Now, notice something else that that he says here, which I think is interesting. Let me find it. Verse 3, for I indeed, as absent in body but present in the spirit, have already judged, as though I were present, him who has done this deed. In the name of our Lord Jesus Christ, when you're gathered together along with my spirit and with the power of our Lord Jesus Christ, deliver this one to Satan for the destruction of the flesh, that his spirit might be saved in the day of the Lord. You get rid of the chametz. That's basically what he's saying. You've got something in your midst that needs to go out. Don't let him be in there, and then get rid of the problem entirely. Get rid of the starter lump. Get rid of the seor. By removing the leavening agent, it can't spread. If you don't have yeast, the bread can't spread. If you do have yeast, but you don't have the moisture and the heat and all that, it can't do it either. There's a way to get rid of it. Paul says you need to get rid of this. Verse 6, your glorying is not good. Do you not know that a little leaven, a little bit of this starter lump, can leaven the entire lump? It starts small, but it slowly consumes everything that it touches. Verse 7, therefore, purge out the old leaven, that you may be a new lump, since you are truly unleavened. For indeed, Christ our Passover was sacrificed for it. So if you're baptized, all sin has been forgiven you, and you can come out of that watery grave completely clean. You are unleavened at that moment. But the old person that was permanently scarred has to be destroyed. You realize when we talk about baptism, we talk about us going into that watery grave. Why? If you have been permanently scarred by something, and that scar represents sin, the only way to get rid of it is for the old person to die and for a new person to be born in its place. You can't fix something that is permanently scarred. That's why when we go through the process of baptism, it is not just to remove something so that we can, you know, get rid of the scars, get rid of the blemishes, and then all of a sudden we're this healed person. The old person dies because it has been permanently scarred, and a new person comes up out of the water and is born. Anything after we've made that commitment to God that causes us to again become corrupted must be thrown out. Now, I want to go through kind of what was talked about by Paul here and see how that affected the church. Let's go back to that list that we mentioned earlier. And then let's compare that to what we see here in 1 Corinthians 5. Leaven causes dough to puff up. Were the people of Corinth puffed up? Well, you know, there are other places that don't accept this sin, but we're a really understanding group of people. We don't want to be judgmental. We went through diversity training, and we're okay with it. And all of a sudden, they're now getting puffed up as if, well, we're better than the other churches because we're not condemning people. We don't have this condemnation in us. It works subtly, slowly, but steadily. You know, when that man first took his father's wife, I'll bet you there was some uproar in the church right at first. Well, why would he do this? Is this right? Well, okay, so everybody else is not all upset. Maybe I shouldn't be upset. And it starts slowly, and then eventually, it, I guess, started to be okay. It starts small, but spreads through the entire loaf. Paul had to address the entire congregation. You've let this seep into your life and completely take over to where nobody seems to be upset by this anymore. He said, I, Paul, am writing you, put that guy out. What's the matter with you? I mean, it's like they couldn't see it because they had been completely consumed. It permanently changed its environment into another product. They had become a church that was almost unrecognizable, and Paul had to step in and take over. But it couldn't act alone. It had to have a trigger. Not only did this man take a wife, but what else happened? People started to say, oh, well, you know, maybe we shouldn't be so judgmental. All right, now it starts to grow, and it starts to change. And what you find out is these triggers were, well, maybe we shouldn't be judgmental. Okay, once you let that in, now it starts to change, and it starts to grow even more. It can be transferred to another. You ever see that happen? You know, if Paul were to allow that to happen, well, maybe someone else could come in and say, well, you know what? My neighbor's wife's pretty special, and my wife's old and haggard. Maybe I'll get rid of her. I mean, he did it. And all of a sudden, it's starting to spread. It can be transferred from one person to another. Paul said you've got to put it out so that nobody else has the same opinion that you can do this. I think that's interesting when you go through that. I also would like to, and we're getting close to wrapping up here, but I wanted to go through a few scriptures just to kind of get you an idea of how this acts today. I want to go through this same list today, but now I don't want to talk about ancient Israel. I don't want to talk about Corinth. I want to talk about us today. Turn with me to 1 Corinthians chapter 13. I won't do a lot of these, but let's just list a few of these things. 1 Corinthians 13, verse 4. Leaven causes the dough to puff up. 1 Corinthians 13 and verse 4. Love suffers long and is kind. Love doesn't envy. Love doesn't parade itself. And love isn't puffed up. If you do just a word search on puffed, there are four or five examples in the New Testament about how sin can puff a person up. I don't have to let go of my sin, or I don't have to let go of my anger. I don't have to love someone because, well, I'm better than everybody else, and that leaven can get in there and puff you up. It's a very good summary. Leaven can cause people to be puffed up. It works subtly, slowly, and steadily. Go to 2 Corinthians chapter 11. We may not always think about this under the guile of leaven, but I think that this will make sense as you look at it. And I turned to the wrong thing. 2 Corinthians chapter 11. In verse 3. But I fear lest somehow, as the serpent deceived Eve by his craftiness. Another translation for craftiness is subtlety. In other words, just slowly but surely. As Satan was able to deceive Eve slowly and surely, so your minds could be corrupted, could become leavened, but could become chametz from the simplicity that is in Christ. You know, a matzo is pretty simple. You know what's in matzo? It's basically egg and water and flour, and that's pretty much it. But when you start adding other things to it, maybe it gives it some spice and some flavor, but it also isn't simple anymore. And we can allow sin to work subtly and slowly. You know, Mr. Simon mentioned in the sermonette, I thought it was really interesting, things that when we were little, things that were a sin back then, were very clearly a sin, are now a part of mainstream. That has slowly and subtly worked into our world's lifestyle over the last 30 or 40 years. Like he was saying, homosexuality, when we were kids, homosexuality was absolutely off the charts. I mean, it just wouldn't have been accepted in school. I can remember being in school and someone came out and openly admitted that they were homosexual. They were taken out of all of the clubs. They couldn't go to any the basketball game. They were allowed to still go to school, but they were shunned from going to any other things. If you do that now, the school would get sued. We have really changed. Small parts, it starts small and spreads through the entire loaf. Now let's look at Romans chapter 5 and verse 12. I'll just do a couple more of these, and then you'll get the idea. They're very easy to find. Starts small and spreads. Romans 5 and verse 12. Therefore, just as through one man sin entered the world, and death through sin, therefore death spread to all men. Sin entered the world through one man. Adam was the starter loaf. He was the seer. And his sin, because it wasn't gotten rid of, spread to Eve, spread to his children, spread to their grandchildren, and on and on and on. If sin isn't dealt with, it becomes a starter loaf. And that's what happened even with Adam and Eve. You can see how this works. It is leaven is such a perfect metaphor for what it is that God is trying to help us to understand has to be taken out. And then once that is spread into man, what is the end result? Death. Permanently scarred, the old man has to die. It permanently changes into another product. It can't act alone. It has to have a trigger. Ephesians chapter 2. Ephesians chapter 2, in verse 2. There has to be a trigger. Let's start in verse 1. And you he made alive who were dead in trespasses and sins, which you once walked according to the course of this world, according to the prince of the power of the air, the spirit that now works in the sons of disobedience. What causes people to sin? The prince of the power of the air. There has to be a catalyst. Yeast can sit on a shelf and never be activated, but you get heat, pressure, moisture, and it starts to activate. We could be in a society, if Satan were not allowed to broadcast his methods, sin wouldn't have an opportunity to grow. But it is there, and it can be transferred from one to another because of this trigger. So, brethren, I think that's good enough. Let's go back and finish off in 1 Corinthians chapter 5, one final verse. 1 Corinthians 5, in verse 8. After we've gone through this, after we've looked at what leaven is and what it is not, after we've looked at how ancient Israel would have made its bread and the process and how they ended up without leaven in their troughs at that particular time, when we look at why God chose leaven as a symbol for this festival, and when we review the facts about what leaven does, that list that I said, notice verse 8, what God tells us to do. Therefore, let us keep this feast, not with old leaven, nor with the leaven of malice and wickedness, but with the unleavened bread of sincerity and truth. 7 days out of the year, we put a certain product out of our house. The spiritual implications of it are far-reaching, and it is a perfect analogy for what God wants us to understand in this festival. Brethren, have you de-leavened your home? The answer is probably yes. Brethren, are you unleavened? Have you taken the chametz out of your house? Yes. But are you matzah? That's a completely different level of understanding. You put sin out, you put leaven out, but you also have to become unleavened. Is there leaven in your life? Do you have hypocrisy or disobedience? It takes a lot of effort to prepare for baking bread. But just a tiny bit of leaven can get in and change everything that you've worked so hard to do. As we prepare ourselves for the kingdom of God, we have to keep the starter loaf out. That's what this day means. I hope these principles will help us as we fulfill God's command. As it states here, therefore, let us keep this feast.